This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I'm talking to Dori Ostermiller. She's the author of a new novel called Outside the Ordinary World. Hi, Dori. How are you?
Hi, David. I'm good. How are you?
Good. You know, I read this book. I know it's your first novel, and it's a very compelling novel about, I guess I would say, a family told, focusing primarily on this married woman named Sylvia, who's she has a family history that has to do with divorce and what happened to her as a child, and then it comes kind of into her own life. And maybe you want to talk a little bit about, you know, I don't want to talk about the story too much because, as with, you know, with most novels, we don't want to give too much away. But
mm-hmm.
It really is a very beautifully written book and very interior. And maybe you could sort of talk about what the inspiration is
mm-hmm.
for you in exploring this territory.
Sure. Well, this, you know, I'm very interested in families and the dynamics of families and the way families stay together, come unglued. My own family of origin came apart when I was growing up, and it was a big deal. It was sort of a traumatic event for me. It was probably for the best in the long run as I look back on it, but at the time it was, you know, very chaotic and happened in the 70s when a lot of families actually were coming apart, and people didn't really have the vocabulary yet or the knowledge or the skill around, you know, how to do it well. As they, you know, I don't know if anyone really ever learned how to do it well, but I think nowadays, you know, there's actually more, there's more of a vocabulary around, you know, how to do divorce well. And back then it was just kind of a free-for-all. So in my own life, you know, divorce impacted me in a big way. And I became very fascinated with the ways in which family dynamics affect people as they then move on and try to have their own families. And the ways in which our parents' unresolved issues, you know, stay with us and play out in our own lives, whether or not we are willing participants in that. In particular, my narrator, Sylvia Sandon, is a woman who is trying to sort of run from her family history, and I was fascinated by the idea that, you know, you really can't outrun those dynamics that haven't been resolved.
Right. Of course, in your story, she is from California. Her family is completely located in California,
okay.
Which you wrote about really beautifully. But she's gone completely, you know, to the other side of the country, as far away as you can possibly get,
right.
And has very little contact with them. So it feels like, of course, that doesn't really, you don't know that right away. I think you learn that as the story unfolds, but that she, as you're saying, doesn't realize through her own family life that she has not resolved issues.
That's right.
And, of course, it is an interesting thought that, you know, we kind of replicate you worry that you sound like your parents or that you say, you know, I hear this, of course, when you're first a parent, you know, then you find yourself saying to your child this ridiculous thing that your parents said to you.
That's right.
And I think that's fairly common. But what you're talking about here is much more complicated because it has to do with her own family now. And
right.
Not just, you know, how she speaks or how she even raises a child. It has to do with how she's relating to herself almost as she's relating to her husband and children.
That's right. And, I think those things play out on all those levels, don't you? It's, you know, how many times did my mother say when I was growing up, well, just wait till you're a mother, you know, see if you can do it any better, you know, so.
Well, it's true. And well, we all, I know I remember my grandmother once when she was very old said to me, you know, her son, who was, you know, by then an adult, had told her when she was probably 90 about this terrible thing she had done to him when he was a child. and that he had never gotten over it. And she realized, and she was really heartbroken to realize how she had not been aware, and how things that you do, you're just living your life and trying to be somebody, and you have no idea how it's affecting the people around you, which really is kind of the pattern set by Sylvia's mother.
That's right.
Who is, in a certain way, completely unaware of how the choices she's making are affecting the people around her, in some ways, tragically.
Yes, I think that's true. But
she's not a villain either. I mean, I think that clearly you've been very, there's no feeling, there's no judgment placed on her by you as the narrator of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least let's say that you're not judging her harshly,
mm-hmm.
condemning her for something. You've actually presented her as a pretty complex, full person who made choices that affected other people, but she was not trying to harm anyone.
Well, I'm really glad to hear you say that, actually, David, because I have a lot of sympathy for Elaine in the story. I think she's a product of her generation and her upbringing, and she's actually really in conflict about that. She's growing up in a time when values are shifting just seismically.
Well, that's true. I mean, she's coming from, and of course, this is something else that that's a theme in the book, that it's a kind of territory that probably a lot of people are not familiar with, but the family is Seventh-day Adventist.
That's right.
So they're vegetarians, but they're very strict. Elaine, who is the mother of Sylvia, her parents are old-fashioned,
mm-hmm.
really strict, kind of all, it's about the church and the values of the church,
mm-hmm.
and she escapes them, pretty powerfully,
mm-hmm.
but she's still bound by
that whole
period. Whereas, now probably the Sylvia generation, as Sylvia clearly has gone away from that, although I guess her sister has not.
That's right.
Which is interesting, too, because her sister was in rebellion during the period of their teenage years, and you would not have guessed her to become this sort of ramrod straight, you actually cast her as she's a district attorney, so she can become almost the symbol of law and order.
Right. Well, they react to the events of their childhood in a sort of, polar opposite way. And I won't, give away too much about what happens in the center of the story, but I do think that the values of that time really interested me, a lot about growing up and I did grow up in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, in the 70s, and so, some of that was taken from my own life, and there were these generational shifts and gaps where, my grandparents' generation was much stricter in terms of, what you did on the Sabbath and what was okay and how literally you take the Bible, and then in my parents' generation, coming of age in the 70s and the 60s, of course, there were all of these cultural things happening that just flew in the face of all that, and it was the sexual revolution, and it was, Gloria Steinem and the Nixon years, and so it was a time of incredible upheaval, and popular culture was just exploding, and I think it was very confusing for a lot of people, and particularly women like Elaine, who had spent their lives really trying to be good wives and mothers and sort of, pull the church line, do what their mothers did, and then all of a sudden they find themselves questioning, their sense of identity, and maybe there's something else out there. I can remember all these mothers of my friends when I was in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade suddenly going back to work or leaving their husbands, It was just this seismic shift.
It's true, and it was, finally for women, the catching up in a certain way, but it was also new territory. They had to establish rules of behavior. There's no guide for how do you become
a person.
How do
you do it?
Yeah.
That's
no,
right.
I think clearly, at least for me, I can think of my mother going through that as, a very painful thing for her as well.
Right.
I think it was a very, common in that era for women who were adults to have to suffer as they changed the world.
That's right. And there were no rules about how you do it or how to do it well or, you know, how to do it and bring your family along or, you know, so I think I was really trying to capture that with Elaine, a woman who's...
And of course, you know, your story is a novel, I think a lot of people, you know, tend to get distracted, I think, from the fiction when they try, you know, you've set it in contemporary times and
mm-hmm.
it's with people who are kind of, you could sort of imagine recognizing, you
mm-hmm.
know, that Sylvia is an artist and you're a writer and she's in Massachusetts and you're in Massachusetts.
Right.
So I think people have a tendency to, and I think you mentioned this to me before we started recording, that you've had people ask you questions about the story, trying to delve into how much is real, you know, as a
yeah.
kind of, and I look at that as almost vicariousness, trying to, you know, breach what fiction is supposed to be.
That's right.
You know, when it's a novel, it's your imaginative retelling of your story.
That's right.
Not necessarily, it's not a memoir. If you wanted to write a memoir, you could write a memoir.
Absolutely.
So, but, and I'm not trying to preach on this, but I think it's important to talk about that when you read a book like this, there is kind of, understandably, you know, kind of questioning, you know, whether, how do you know these things? You know, are they things that really happen to you?
Yeah.
But I think imagination is what allows you to express things, you know, figuratively, literally, that may not have happened to you.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was a really interesting process for me, starting with some seeds. You know, there are definitely autobiographical seeds in the book, obviously, and then turning it into fiction and using invention and creating characters and scenes that didn't really exist. But it's, you know, as I said to you earlier, it's written in a very sort of intimate first-person narrative voice.
Incredibly intimate book. I thought there actually were times when I wished I could have said to Sylvia, don't do that. You know, that I really felt
or at least don't tell us so much about it, right?
Well, yeah, it almost was painful, and there were times in the book when it was painful in that way.
Yeah.
That you almost have, it's sort of like listening, going into a group therapy session when somebody tells you a really terrible thing.
I know.
That is really awful, and you just, you know, you have to listen, and you want to relate, and you want to be supportive, but really hard.
It's hard not to shake them, I know.
And then you sort of feel like, but of course that's part of learning how people operate. I mean, the
right.
thing is, you know, maybe a lot of people haven't shared those experiences. So by going through them with your character or characters, you can travel that road. You know, you can go where they went and try to understand how it worked for them, even though that wasn't your direct experience.
That's right. And, you know, it's been really interesting because, in fact, I have been faithful to my husband. I'll just say that publicly. It was, you know, and it was very interesting imagining having an affair and going down Sylvia's path with her. And I've had people come up to me, you know, and said, I read your book. Gosh, you know, and it's just been such an interesting experience. I even had someone come and say, well, I'm reading your book, and I just got to the place where, you know, where your daughter finds out. You know, it's like, wait a minute, it's not my daughter, it's the narrator's daughter. You know, it's just people really do confuse it with a memoir, and it's not a memoir. So,
well, but of course, for the writer, that is, I mean, it is interesting, too, and I hadn't thought about that, but, you know, for your husband and your children,
yeah.
That's important too, that they have to trust you and kind of, you know, be with you as a writer, as the artist, saying that I'm creating a story does not necessarily mean that A, I want to be unfaithful or
that's
be
right.
what I was. And in fact, the imagining, maybe the, although even so, then the, you know, you could almost imagine a spouse or someone related to you getting nervous.
Yeah.
Because you are able to imagine.
Imagine it so well. Right?
Yeah. that could work one of two ways. It's sort of like a creative expression of, you know, letting off steam. You know,
yeah.
Like somebody saying I masturbate. It's a way of, you know, well, you could look at that as really horrible.
Right.
Or, well, so what's wrong? It's just a way of participating in a fantasy that you don't have to have then.
That's right.
And
you know, I do sort of see it that way, to be quite honest. It's sort of like, oh, okay, I got that out of my system.
Right. No, it's almost...
don't have to do that now.
Right. So maybe that's a way that you could almost tell people, look, if you have... if there's something that you're worried about in yourself.
Write about it.
Write it.
Absolutely.
And then you can...
it's very effective.
Right. You can explore that territory in a really good way. I mean,
yeah.
And, you know, people talk about that as it's good to fantasize. It doesn't necessarily mean you need to do the things
right.
that you're imagining. So that they're expressions of your psyche as an outlet. And I think
yeah.
probably for a lot of artists and writers, that's what the art is about.
Right. And sometimes, you know, it takes you into very frightening territory. It's, you know, it's not always all fun. It can, you know, this book was scary for me at times to write. You know, it became very real for me. The characters really lived and breathed, and there were times when, in the writing of it, I almost felt like the story took on a life of its own in a kind of woo-woo way. I don't know if I should even say it because it sounds so ridiculous, but I'll just give you one example. One morning I was writing early in the morning, and I was writing the scene where Emmy, the youngest daughter, gets her head split open by a goat.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The goat kicks her in the head, and I was sitting on my sofa at 5 in the morning trying to write this scene and trying to imagine how much blood there would be, if she would need stitches, and the trip to the hospital. And as I was writing it, I hear a crash, and I turn around, and my own 5-year-old daughter has just fallen down the stairs and split her head open on the radiator.
Oh, no.
So, you know, off we go to the emergency room.
Right. So you get to worry. Then you get to worry that maybe psychically you caused something.
I know. I mean, it was very strange. And another time, I was I used to go up to Ashfield, which is where the affair in the story, you know, takes place, or where she meets her lover. I used to go up there on a writing retreat. There's a place up there called Wellspring House where you can rent a very cheap room. And so that's where the idea for the affair was born. And one time I decided to take my own fictional directions to Sylvia's lover's house.
Oh, to see where you would end up.
To see where I would end up. And there, you know, it actually kind of worked. And there was a cottage out there that looked very similar to the one I had envisioned. So it became a little eerie at certain points. And I thought, boy, I don't know, maybe I should just put this aside for a while. It got a little spooky.
Well, but on the other hand, that's sort of, and I think I've, you know, you read about writers sometimes who feel like they're exploring places in their beings that are, you know, they are painful.
Yeah.
They're not all, it's not, you know, novel fiction is not always about happy endings or resolving problems in a way that makes you feel good.
No.
Sometimes the resolution comes from the pain of the experience.
That's right.
So I think that makes
sense. It's not a light read, I don't think.
No, and that's partially, you know, when I said before, there were times when I felt like I wanted to reach out and tell Sylvia, don't do that. That's how real it was for me. So, you know, the fact that it was real for you doesn't surprise me either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the vividness of your writing comes through there.
Well, thank you.
Well, it is a wonderful book. You know, there is some pain there. We'll have to let people experience that for themselves. But I really enjoyed talking to you, Dori.
Well, thank you so much, David. I had a great time.
Thanks. This has been David Wilk for Writer's Cast. I've been talking to Dori Ostermiller about her novel, Outside the Ordinary World.